Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. Coming up on today's program, Pope features in manga book. We find out more about a new manga comic book about Pope Benedict that's been specially produced for those attending the World Youth Day event in Madrid next month. Witnesses to the Famine. We speak to representatives of Caritas and Jesuit refugee services about the reasons behind the worsening hunger crisis in the Horn of Africa and listen to their testimony about the plight of the victims. And cherishing God's creation. We offer an ecology reflection that ponders the wonders of our natural world, including those creatures with no utilitarian role for humans. Young people attending the World Youth Day event in Madrid next month will get to see Pope Benedict in a new role as a manga comic book hero. Entitled Habemus Papam, the new comic is being specially produced for the World Youth Day gathering that nearly 2 million people are expected to attend. The project is the brainchild of Jonathan Lin, a Catholic manga comic publisher based in California. Over 300,000 copies of the comic are being produced and printed, and will be distributed to participants at the World Youth Day event and to the general public at key locations throughout the Spanish capital. Lin told me more about this project.
Yeah, basically, it's a short story that tells the drama of the Pope leading up to his election at the conclave in 2005. And then there's some flashback sequences of his time as a young seminarian back in Germany. And then it ends with his travels to the last two previous World Youth Days in Germany and Australia, and then what those messages are for young people. And then finally it ends with his message for the youth at this coming World Youth Day in Spain.
And what kind of feedback have you had from any young people who've read the advanced copies?
It's been pretty good. What I noticed is that a lot of them did not know that Pope Benedict the 16th, he did not want to be Pope, which took them by surprise. And so we're hoping that this book actually can serve as a tool to let people know that the Holy Father is a real person, that he really cares for us, right? And he generally has these same issues that the rest of us do in trying to follow Christ.
You've produced manga comics before, haven't you, about biblical figures such as St. Paul and Judith. What gave you the idea of doing biblical-themed manga comics?
Well, basically, when I was thinking of starting a business, I was talking to my father about ideas, and he had this idea asking, how come there are no Bible manga or Bible-themed manga out there? And it got me thinking, how come there isn't any? So I did started doing some research, and there were a few. They weren't that many around, so I decided, this is kind of like an interesting niche that I could kind of tap into. It's kind of underserved, and manga serves this kind of tween and teen market. And I saw, at least in the Catholic book market segment, this area wasn't being addressed. So that's how it got started.
Coming back to the manga comics that you've produced before, I mean, how popular did they prove with young people? And what made you choose these two particular biblical figures?
So we chose these two figures because our writers had an interest in writing about St. Paul and then Judith. And also because they themselves had pretty interesting stories to tell. Like St. Paul, he had this incredible adventure in his life from being a persecutor, and then he finds God, and then he goes on to start spreading the gospel, right, until his martyrdom in Rome. And so the writer felt that Paul's road to Damascus moment could really resonate with everybody, because, a lot of people have the same experience, this road to Damascus experience. And it might not be as dramatic as Paul's, but nevertheless, they do have this experience. And then the same thing with Judith. She has to make the decision whether to go and save Israel, right? And so the writer, Gabrielle, really liked that concept and thought it would really work well to show, especially young female readers, you know, a positive role model who takes control and takes control of the situation and goes out and saves her country.
Tell us a little bit about Mango comics for those who might not know much about them, you know, just how popular they are, how they started.
Sure, yeah. So manga originated in Japan, and it's basically their style of comic books. So in the West, we have our style. At least in the U.S., we have, you know, Spider-Man and Superman and those guys from Marvel. And in Japan, they have this own style called manga. And the television form, or the film format, is called anime. So manga covers this wide range of complex stories and subjects that can span, like, you know, real vast genres and storylines. And so we chose manga as a tool basically to show to, you know, to the youth and to the world that the church is, you know, that we're not afraid of modernity, right? We're not afraid of evolving culture. And because it's so popular, you know, manga is one of the most popular exports of Japan, right? I think the last figure was over $1 billion in anime or manga-related either books or merchandise that's sold overseas. And so we thought manga would be an excellent format to reach out to young people where they're at.
Coming back to the manga for the World Youth Day, how much is it going to cost, or will it be distributed free of charge, or is it the organizing committee who is picking up the tab?
Yeah, so basically the printing donation is covered by John Paul the Great Catholic University in San Diego. So they're footing the printing costs in Madrid with the local printer. And then my company, we're footing the development costs, so like the writing and then the illustration expenses. The book actually is 32 pages, and it will be distributed for free at about 400 or so special kiosks, or book display stands, basically. That's going to be peppered throughout the city, either at catechesis sites, at tourist spots, at metro stations, train stations, the airport. And it will be distributed by the logistics team of World Youth Day.
Is it just Spanish or what?
Oh, it'll be both in English and Spanish.
And do you have any future projects in the pipeline?
Yeah, we do. We're coming out with an expanded version of the Benedict XVI manga. So this will be 200 pages, and it'll go into much more detail about Pope Benedict's life, you know, from when he was a young child to being drafted into the German army, serving as a anti-aircraft battery unit. To his days as a seminarian, to his days as, you know, teaching in Germany, and then finally leading up to his current role as Holy Father. And then we're going to try to include some interesting points, like his conversation with astronauts, for example, or his first Twitter post or tweet, and those kind of fun things. And then we'll also include stories that people will get to submit themselves about their own personal stories involving the Holy Father during this coming World Youth Day on our special website.
I was speaking to Jonathan Lin, head of Manga Hero, publisher of the new Habemus Papam comic book. Famine is tightening its grip on the Horn of Africa region, with aid workers warning the worst is yet to come. Many who have visited the afflicted area report that the malnutrition levels among the victims are the worst they have ever seen. More than 11 million people in the Horn of Africa are at risk of starvation, following the worst drought in 60 years and civil unrest in Somalia, which is compounding the problem. The worst-hit country is Somalia, where hundreds of thousands of people have fled either to the capital or else to the neighbouring countries of Kenya and Ethiopia to seek food and water. So, how badly are the victims suffering in the worst-affected areas? Jim Ashman is the emergency coordinator in Kenya for the Catholic Relief Service, who has just returned from a visit to the Dadaab refugee camp in the north of the country, where tens of thousands of refugees fleeing from Somalia have arrived in recent months.
Dadaab is the world's largest refugee camp, and Ashman says right now it's way past its maximum capacity.
There's about 400,000 refugees there who have come from Somalia, and the ones who have come since January, about 100,000 of them are in particularly bad shape. I went to one of the areas where there was 25,000 of them. They were settled on a floodplain, which will be inundated by September, and the doctor who was there, he said that at least one out of four of the children arriving were severely malnourished. So they are really obviously in quite a dire situation.
What is the capacity of the camp?
The camp is far over capacity, and I think that's the problem, is that there's no space within the camp. The camp was originally built for 90,000, and there are 400,000 there now. So these people are actually camped in areas around the camp. Now, we are initiating interventions there with our own private funds to assist them. It's just that more efforts like that are necessary.
According to Ashman, that urgent need for more humanitarian aid is underlined by the fact that in northern Kenya, there is a looming shortfall in available food aid for the hungry.
In Kenya, there's at least 3.5 million people who right now need food aid. WFP only has food for less than half of those. So the situation overall is quite dire. The national food stocks are expected to run out by the end of August. We are working in conjunction and coordination with the other Caritas partners. There's Trocare, Catholic, Miserior, Caritas Australia, Caritas Swiss, that we do coordinate with, and so we can make sure that we fill the gaps that are there and avoid overlap. People who work for me on a mission with Caritas Switzerland in Wajir, which is an extremely hard-hit area of the country.
Speak to us a little bit more about that mission. Why are you going there?
We're going there because it's an underserved area, and it's kind of the eye of the storm when it comes to the Kenyan side of the drought. It's extremely hard-hit. There is hunger there. There's lack of access to water. What we've already begun is to do supplemental feeding for the vulnerable, the children under 5, pregnant, lactating women, the elderly, and to provide water sources, to do emergency drilling of wells.
Like many other relief workers, Ashman says the current humanitarian crisis in the Horn of Africa is the most serious he's ever seen.
I've been dealing with emergency for over 20 years now, and this is actually, in terms of the nutritional situation, it's probably the worst I've ever actually seen personally. It's a big catastrophe. There is a need for more resources. The CRS response right now, just speaking for Catholic Relief Services, is 90% privately funded and less than 10% publicly funded. So we really are relying on private donations to be able to assist these people in extreme need.
What would it mean if we don't get the aid to these people?
Well, people will die, and the ones who won't die will lose their livelihoods. They will come into camps. It will just compound the situation more. It's important that the people are assisted now before the situation deteriorates to famine, as it already has in Somalia.
But why is famine stalking the Horn of Africa region? And could more have been done to prevent or mitigate the current crisis? Ashman says the real tragedy is that experts had been warning last year that the El Niño drought was coming to the Horn of Africa. But only now, with a full-scale hunger crisis underway, is the funding starting to arrive.
Meteorologists say that this is a La Niña phenomenon. And I think the shame of it is we knew, the international community knew that this was happening a year ago. And despite appeals, it had to get to this point before we started to be able to access funding. We do have early warning systems in place. And I think that even right now we're in the emergency mode, addressing emergency life-saving needs. But it's important that we continue to long-term solutions for these kind of things. So it is something that was seen to be coming. Approximately a year ago, they raised the alert that a La Niña drought was coming to the region. Indeed, it did happen. That is, of course, compounded in Somalia by the political situation, which makes it extremely difficult to access these people to be able to deliver aid. Therefore, so many, about 1,800 a day, are now crossing into Kenya. So it's a combination of those two problems put together here.
Many of those refugees crossing over into Kenya from Somalia have harrowing stories of how they trekked for weeks to escape the drought and conflict in their homeland. Ashman again.
They've come primarily because they lack access to food. and that they cannot get relief food in Somalia. These people come in very, very bad condition, having walked hundreds of kilometers. The great majority of the women have experienced violence, gender-based violence against them. So when they come, it's really a pitiful sight, and I would really advocate that we give them as much assistance as possible to get them out of that situation.
Another aid worker from the Caritas Confederation we spoke to is Maurice McGuillan, who's head of the emergency team in Kenya for Trukore. He's just returned from a field trip to northern Kenya and talks about one particular area he visited where the only thing desperate families can find to eat are small berries and nuts growing in the bush. He believes that parts of northern Kenya and Ethiopia risk following Somalia into a famine situation unless more aid arrives soon.
We visited villages in Turkana in the north of Kenya, where you have people who are whole communities that are down to one meal a day, and that meal is made up of crushed nuts and berries that they have been able to gather from the bush, mixed with a small amount of dirty water to make something that people can get into their stomachs. But really it is a matter of trying to half-fill empty stomachs. There's zero nutrition value, and those people can't last under those conditions for very long. We looked at the under-5s in those villages, and they are already in the danger levels in terms of malnutrition.
Do you feel it's inevitable then that many, many people are going to die?
Well, I mean, the UN have already said by their standards there are two regions in Somalia that are in famine, as they describe it at the moment. They reckon that by August, the whole of south-central Somalia will be in famine conditions. And from what I have seen, northern Kenya and southern Ethiopia are not far behind that.
I was speaking to Maurice McGuillan from Trukore in Kenya. And earlier you heard the voice of Jim Ashman from Catholic Relief Services in Kenya, interviewed by my colleague Ema McCarthy. Another Catholic organisation that's been responding to the hunger crisis in the Horn of Africa is the Jesuit Refugee Service, or JRS. It's just announced plans to step up its ongoing work to help Somali refugees in Kenya and Ethiopia. Father Peter Ballis is the international director of JRS, and he spoke to my colleague Lydia O'Kane about the roots to this crisis.
I mean, the crisis looks like a new crisis, is a chronic crisis. For years and years, Somalia is at war, not all parts, but a central part, and Somali population are leaving the country as refugees. The Jesuit Refugee Service is working with them since several years already, more in the urban centers in Addis Ababa, in Nairobi, or in Kakuma refugee camp in the northwest of Kenya. I say it's a chronic crisis of no government. A country with no government, we have militia rule. But what is now the immediate, which exaggerates the crisis, is the combination of a non-functional country, a country at war, and a drought. Normally, countries, when there's a drought and the country is functional, they can manage, organize the drought relief and the help, and it doesn't have to come to that catastrophe, what we face now. But it's a combination which hits the people.
Who are the most vulnerable? When we think of crises such as these, we do think of young people, young children, mothers. Again, are we looking at these people being the most vulnerable in this crisis?
Yes, that's always in societies. Any crisis hits more the children and mothers who take care of the children, or the elderly. And in JRS, we have one of our criteria is always to take care of the more vulnerable. And that applies also in terms of food. Once I thought, oh, we are not an organization which does a lot of food distribution, but when we look carefully and look at the different projects all over the world, we often do that, but very targeted for very vulnerable families. As I said, Somali families or refugees in Kenya, they get a monthly ration of food. Those are the most vulnerable and cannot manage without that additional help. So we do that, and that would be the same thing in in a situation once we get set up there. Definitely where the people fall through the gaps, we will try also to make a contribution in that area. Also, we are not covering blanket-wise like the World Food Programme or whole camp, that we cannot, but targeted we can, the very vulnerable.
James Stapleton is the communications coordinator of JRS and was also present at that three-way interview. He says whilst the international community has finally woken up to the severity of the crisis and is making pledges of aid, as always, the key question is whether those promises will translate into actual money on the table.
International pressure is going to help. Pledges have happened in the past and they've not been fulfilled. The World Food Programme indicated this as a possible crisis more than 12 months ago, and today we have the result of Somalia slipping down off the priorities, not being important to the international community. Without a shadow of a doubt, what's happening at the moment will focus minds. Populations are looking at what's happening in Somalia as events unfold every day. We welcome the pledges by states, but we wait and to see whether or not they're implemented.
In countries like Somalia and the Horn of Africa, it does seem to be one problem after another. We have conflict and then, unfortunately, we have drought, which leads to starvation, which just seems to be an ongoing disaster, as it were. Problems seem to compound problems.
Yeah, it's a failed state, and instability and disorder is terribly inhuman because those who have the gun will then rule. And any natural factor, like also drought, creates then the big catastrophe. But it is already a human catastrophe combined with a natural catastrophe.
We're not on the ground in Somalia at the moment, but if you like to take the words from the World Food Programme, when they said that most or many of their staff have never seen a crisis of this scale before. I think from the people who were trying to get into the country, that's a very clear indication of the scale of the crisis at the moment in Somalia and the seriousness.
That was James Stapleton, Communications Coordinator for Jesuit Refugee Services. And you also heard the voice of Father Peter Balès, International Director of JRS, both interviewed by Lydia O'Kane. Mankind must renew and strengthen that covenant between human beings and the environment, which should mirror the creative love of God. These are the words of Pope Benedict, who has often been dubbed the Green Pope because of his frequent appeals for humans to protect and respect the environment. And when it comes to God's creation, all living creatures must be taken into consideration, even those who have no utilitarian role for us humans. Let's hear more on that theme in the following Ecological Reflection by Mary Colwell, an environmental advisor to the Catholic Bishops' Conference of England and Wales, who comes from the Diocese of Clifton-Bristol.
I was privileged recently to climb to the top of the Cairngorms in the Highlands of Scotland to search out one of Britain's hardiest birds, the ptarmigan. If you've never seen one, imagine a small, plump hen with feathery feet, and in the winter, white feathers hide it perfectly in the snowy landscape of a mountain plateau. It likes the high life, in this case over 3,000 feet, and it scratches through the snow and ice to find shoots of heather to eat. I was recording for a BBC programme and had to shield myself from the Arctic wind behind a large rock. It was January and I was wearing thermals, a shirt, a fleece, a waterproof jacket and trousers, hat, ski gloves and a scarf. Even so, after half an hour of watching, I was beginning to feel the cold. This little lady, and it was a female because of the lack of red eye stripe, shuffled about in just her white feathers and looked perfectly content. As the skiers and snowboarders whooshed around us, she carried on her life in peace. Being in nature helps me to think through how I fit into this enormous, complex and diverse world. Sometimes that relationship is obvious. A lake or a river is a reminder of the necessity of fresh drinking water. Insects buzzing about the garden are needed to pollinate food crops. None of that is rocket science. But things get a little more complex when looking at a ptarmigan 3,000 feet up a mountain. What is my and everybody else's relationship with this Arctic bird that has no direct contact with people and is of no economic use to us at all? This is a really taxing question, and one that needs answering before we can truly tackle the present environmental problems. If our relationship with nature is purely practical and based on making sure we have what we need in terms of resources, then in a way that's simple. We spend our time and our money saving bees and conserving water or whatever else. But what if it isn't just utilitarian? What if the integrity of creation is intricately tied to the integrity of the human person, so that the defilement of one is the defilement of the other? Pope Benedict understands that we cannot become what we're called to be in the eyes of God if we are not whole in our approach to all of our relationships. He asks people to engage with the world wholeheartedly and enthusiastically, but always with a view to serving that higher good, lest we disfigure the beauty of creation by exploiting it for selfish purposes. For me, nature is far more than a sustainer of human life. It is a provider of joy, mystery, wonder, and fear. It can inspire us to music, poetry, and art, but it can also strike terror into our hearts. Nature can humble us in a way that is unique, and that small ptarmigan certainly made me realise how vulnerable I was on top of the Cairngorms in winter. Albert Einstein said that if a person can no longer stand wrapped in awe and wonder, then they're as good as dead. For me, this is the heart of the answer to our ecological woes. When we can look at all of life on Earth as a reflection of the God whom we serve, then utilitarian resources are transformed into gifts to be treasured and used with respect. Livestock become animals with the ability to feel distress and pain, and wilderness becomes a place where our souls can soar to God, not just a development opportunity. The times they are a-changing, sang Bob Dylan, and how true, because we now live in a demanding world. The reality of climate change does not allow us the privilege of assuming drought and floods are other people's problems. We are all in this complicated, diverse, interconnected world together, and we all depend on each other to live simple, holy, respectful lives that find God in all things. The ptarmigan that live on the mountains of Scotland do not need me to help them survive extreme cold or to find the food buried in snow. But they do need you and me to live in accordance with our faith. I was struck how this self-reliant little bird could be snuffed out of existence by the lives of people who never go to the tops of mountains or who live thousands of miles away. If greenhouse gases continue to build up, the mountain tops will become warm, and the ptarmigan will slip over the edge into oblivion. If that happens, I shall certainly deeply mourn their passing, and the earth will have lost yet another example of the wonder of God.
That reflection was written and voiced by Mary Colwell, who comes from the Diocese of Clifton, Bristol, and is an environmental advisor to the Catholic Bishops' Conference of England and Wales. Well, that's all for today from me, Susie Hodges, here at Vatican Radio's English programme. But we'll be on the air again at the same time tomorrow. And you can always find our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. Laudato Jesus Christus.